You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, February 9th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, from inside, I don't know, it's really accurate to say the belly of the beast, but from New Hampshire, Matt Taibbi on what is apparently New Hampshire primary day. Also on the program today, is Marco Rubio a human being? Question to be resolved by Republican voters in New Hampshire.
Is Marco Rubio a human being? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Is he a human being? I don't think we understand the question we're asking ourselves.
Well, that's the central question. Is Marco Rubio a human being? Jeb Bush wants more money in politics. Donald Trump gone wild, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to see how New Hampshire reacts to Ted Cruz being called out for being a lady pot.
And frankly, it was tremendous. The girl and Donald did a great job.
Clinton's Goldman speech is a metaphor for her fundraisers and advisors. Timothy Geithner will help us explain. Also, Michael Bloomberg says in person he's contemplating a run for the presidency. Let's look back at one of those times where he contemplated what would happen if 500 people in New York got a living wage.
Disaster.
Meanwhile, a Rick Snyder recall petition is approved, but it's not about Flint. Obama seeks $11 billion to aid the homeless, and apparently Beyonce's halftime performance really upset some old white people who are on TV. We will get to all that and more, ladies and gentlemen, on today's Majority Report. I should tell you that I did not go to New Hampshire. I was planning on going. It's pretty obvious I'm not in New Hampshire right now. I didn't go and then just come back just to see the state. But I contracted another cold, so I am now out of the past 90 days, about 70 for 90, I think. I don't know. There's something about two kids, having two kids running around, particularly one of them who's three going to, or not even quite three, going to preschool, where the amount of colds is exponentially large in the house. It's virtually impossible to not get sick. It just goes, Saul, Mila, me. Saul, Mila, me. Saul, Mila, me. And occasionally Nikki gets sick. It is a nightmare. It is a total nightmare. I don't feel well at all. I should say this on a good note. I think I mentioned this the other day. Saul had stolen my razor. And I don't know if he actually felt like he was stealing it. He just took it. And not with the razor. I just want to make that clear. I don't leave the blades in the razor for this very reason. But we found it. It was wedged. It was literally wedged in between like a bookshelf and some other wooden, like, I don't know, side table. Apparently, Saul was just looking for small crevices in which to put my Harry's razor handle. So, congratulations to me. I found it. And frankly, I mean, here's the thing about it. One, I love it. Two, if I lost it, to be totally honest, I wouldn't freak out because Harry's is such a great deal anyways that it's not like I'm going out to the to Walgreens and buying like a $42 set of, I don't know, those razors that they have in those like plastic ice houses. It's the best shave I've had in a long time. The blades are super sharp. They provide a close, comfortable shave. And they're also incredibly inexpensive. It's the only shaving company that has both amazing and quality and low prices. They're factory direct prices. They cut out the middleman. They ship it right to your door. They sell their blades at half the price of the leading brand. Over 1 million guys have already made the switch, and thousands more switch every day. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at harrys.com? The starter set is an amazing deal. Like I say, you get a handle that is like chrome. You get a razor, or three razor blades, I should say, and moisturizing shaving cream. They generally don't like to discount because their prices are already low, but Harry's will give you $5 off your first order with the promo code MajorityReport. Stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to harrys.com right now. That's harrys.com. Enter the code MajorityReport at checkout. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to catch up with Matt Taibbi, who is on the campaign trail. Let me just tell you this before we go to Taibbi. And I can't tell if this is good news or bad news. I mean, when you see footage of like Trump and Cruz and Rubio and frankly Bush, I mean, all of them. And then you read that an asteroid 100 feet in diameter is expected to pass by Earth next month and could come as close as 11,000 miles away, which is apparently just 5% of the distance between Earth and the moon. So 11,000 miles sounds like, I don't know. Well, I mean, it's not that long. I mean, that's like what, four trips to California from here. So it could pass with it was close as 11,000 miles away. On the other hand, could be as far as away as 9 million miles. So that's, I mean, that seems like a large margin of error. But it's going to zoom past the Earth March 5th, is according to NASA. Despite the potential for relatively close flyby, researchers don't foresee any danger. I have a feeling this is tied directly into the Republican primary. It seems to me that this could be it, folks. So, and the question is, you know, are we going to go out smiling or are we going to go out fretting? I don't know. We'll talk to Matt Taibbi and see.
It's like those alien movies in the 50s where like the visitor shows up like, we were here to judge whether or not you could join a more advanced civilization or we will destroy you.
Right.
I really hope those dudes are not watching the Republicans debate.
Right. There's just like if they send that down to us, those aliens, they probably have control of it. They're toying with us right now. It's also sort of like Armageddon. I don't know if you saw that movie, but we're just going to have to get a ragtag bunch of guys together and go up and blow this baby up. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Matt Taibbi.
relations. Swiss search for you by night in the dapper gravel care. Until the town finds Christ, injustice is my middle name. You don't need to change the future's with us. You don't need to change your future's
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is always a pleasure to welcome to the program Matt Taibbi, contributing writer for Rolling Stone magazine, author of multiple best-selling books on the campaign trail. Matt, welcome to the program.
How's it going, Sam?
It's going pretty good. Now, Matt, I don't know if you've heard about this 100-foot asteroid that is that could come as close as 11,000 miles away, which is only 5% of the distance between the Earth and the Moon. Tell me, at this point, having been on the campaign trail, having hung out in New Hampshire, following Republican candidates around, how much do you hope that this thing hits planet Earth?
That's interesting. I probably hoped more today than I did yesterday. I guess that's probably a good answer. And I know exactly where I want it to hit, too. The Radisson downtown Manchester. So
the Radisson in Manchester, New Hampshire, is where it's where the Radio Row is. It's where all the television networks broadcast from. There seems to be a bar there that looks like sort of a classic New Hampshire a hotel bar, which is just full of wood and looks like every other hotel bar, I guess,
right.
in New England. With a little sporting goods, Red Sox paraphernalia probably on the walls. So
yeah, a little bit. The Red Sox Patriots paraphernalia store is actually down the street.
Really?
So yeah, and they sell really good stuff there. You can get like baby binkies with Pats logos on them and stuff like that, but the hotel itself is it's a pretty target-rich environment. So
for asteroids. All right, so, you know, we spoke to you, I guess it was a month or two ago, when you were following around. At one point, you were following around Kasich, and he's been going around, he's been saying this quote, and I'm wondering, is this something that you said to him? He said, like, you know, people have been saying that There's three tracks. There's the establishment and the sort of the alt-con track, and then there's your track. Weren't you following around Kasich? I mean, what are you doing up there? Who are you following, and who's going to win?
I'm following Trump this time. The story I'm writing is really about Trump, so I'm kind of focused on him. One of the things that that happens when you do campaign trail stuff is that it's hard to get a feel for a candidate unless you've seen his act or his or her act rather, a good dozen times, so you can get a feel for, you know, what they're really trying to accomplish. So I haven't seen Trump enough yet to really have a good grasp of everything. So that's what I'm trying to do here is familiarize myself with his act.
My understanding is that Ted Cruz is a lady pot.
He's a what?
A lady pot.
A lady pot. What does that even mean?
Lady part. I was doing the
he's a lady part. I haven't heard that. Is that
wait?
That
you didn't hear that he repeated? Am I really breaking this news to you that he called Ted Cruz a pussy from stage the other day?
Oh, my goodness. No, I missed that.
What?
I completely missed that.
Matt Taibbi, hold on. You're the only person who's left to know. Hold on. Let's put on my... Wow.
Was that last night?
Yeah, last night. Hold on. Here we go. Ready? Let's do this.
Oh,
This just breaking, Matt Taibbi did not hear that Donald Trump repeated, somebody from the audience apparently yelled out, Ted Cruz is a pussy. And then, of course, Donald Trump.
So I know how this happened. I left last night in the middle of that event and because it was a snowstorm and came home and didn't turn the news on. So well, there you go.
Well, guess what? That lady also said that you were one, too, for leaving early because of the snow. Let's listen to Donald Trump. This you can hear this right here. Here's Donald Trump, and he does this in a classic way. You tell me if this is sort of indicative of what you're seeing Trump do. Here he is, you know, playing coy. Like, I'm not going to say what you just said. And he, of course, says it. Here it is. This is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And people are worried about my tone. You heard the other night at debate. They asked Ted Cruz, serious question, well, what do you think of waterboarding? Is it okay? And honestly, I thought he'd say absolutely, and he didn't. He said, well, it's, you know, he's concerned about the answer because some people, she just said a terrible thing. You know what she said? Shout it out because I don't want to. Okay, you're not allowed to say, and I never expect to hear that from you again. She said, I never expect to hear that from you again. She said he's a pussy. That's terrible. Terrible.
That's awesome. I can't believe I missed that. I'm gonna go commit to that after this interview now.
There you go. That's the isn't it sort of amazing though that that's the conversation that we're having right now about, like, oh, I missed his rollout of his policy where he would save Medicare or no, I didn't hear that right. Policy about what he plans for education. No, it's just that he repeated what some New Hampshire lady said about Ted Cruz. I can give you somebody tracked down the woman who said it. And apparently she also had this to say to Elizabeth Plank from Mike. She's okay. A 52-year-old woman from Salem, New Hampshire. Now, did you grow up in Boston, didn't you, around that area?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. You know who this woman is, basically. She said, I watched the debate. Ted Cruz just comes across as a pussy. He doesn't have the balls to stand up to Putin. He doesn't have the balls to stand up to other leaders in other countries. When asked whether she trusts Trump, she answered, he's got the balls the size of watermelons, whereas the other one's got the balls of little grapes. And then she said, the other one, Rubio, has balls like a raisin.
Well, she's very horticultural, I guess, right? Or she's very fixated on fruit.
Well,
wow.
So,
but yeah, no, I know who that lady is, definitely. I mean, I've heard her, a million times. You know, that guy's wicked queer.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And she hasn't really thought about how uncomfortable it would be to have testicles the size of watermelons. I have a feeling that would be really not a fun thing.
That's true.
I would imagine a guy like...
pants you'd have to wear, yeah, I think. Yeah.
All right, so... So putting that aside, I mean, how many rallies have you seen Trump? I mean, what is it that you get from Trump? I mean, I think, you know, people have a sense of this guy, how he's different, I guess, on some level than the other candidates. But what is your sense, the extent that you have one at this point?
Well, first of all, he's a good campaigner. I mean, I hate to say that, but, you know, he really commands his audience. He doesn't have a script in the classic way that other candidates have a script. He gets up there, he ad-libs. No, a lot of other politicians do that. But there's a scale. You know, there are people who recite lines that they've memorized, and if you go from speech to speech, the lines aren't going to vary at all. And that's people like Rubio. Right, like Rubio will do, as you saw it in the debate. But you know, he's good. His delivery is excellent. But it's exactly the same speech from one place to another. Trump actually makes fun of candidates who do that. You know, he talks about how he doesn't have a script up there. He's not reading from a little paper. It comes from the heart. And he connects with people. He knows how to work a room. And this is, I think it's a key part of his success. As, I mean, as depressing as it is to sound, he's what he's gaining on is the fact that people have heard other politicians speak before, and he's contrasting how, you know, full of it they sound compared to him.
And give me like a sense of when you follow Kasich around. I mean, Kasich seems to me to be a guy who also is not, I mean, who's a little bit looser, right? I mean, I'm curious as to, you know, he apparently, Kasich is, there's some talk he may come in second up there in terms of the polls. What's going on? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you saying?
Well, I mean, it just seems to me that a guy like Kasich coming in second at this point for the establishment track would be a bit of a disaster, wouldn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Don't they want this thing to be somewhat settled? And, I mean, I just remember in
You're ruining my whole thesis right now by putting it out there before I write it. But basically,
dude, I'm the one who told you that Ted Cruz was a pussy. So, I mean, at the very least. No, well, all right, but expand upon that. I mean, if you're writing on that, go ahead, tell us, because, go.
Yeah, no, basically, my idea is that everything is breaking perfectly for Trump right now, because of exactly what you're talking about. You know, it's a math game, and he wins if the establishment candidates don't knock each other out. So, as long as he doesn't have to campaign against one or two people solely for the rest of the way, he's going to win. His support is insoluble. It's not going to go up or down more than a little bit. So if he has to campaign against four or five people, they're going to split the vote, and he's going to win the plurality. And so when we have something like what's happening now, where Rubio surges after Iowa, then gets knocked down by Christie in New Hampshire, Christie does just well enough that he convinces his donors that he should stay in until Super Tuesday. Kasich maybe comes in second. Then the whole thing is screwed up. Then there's no other. If we don't galvanize behind another person, then that's to Trump's benefit, and it's exactly the situation that he wants, and it's exactly the situation the RNC doesn't want.
What struck me, too, after the debate was how much people pounced on, and I'm talking about the Republican establishment, how much they pounced on Rubio. I mean, you know, I saw it, and I thought, okay, yeah, he's repeating the same thing again. What he's saying is even more insane than the fact that he just keeps repeating it, which is basically that, you know, that he's a man, you know, a Manchurian candidate. You know, that was, you know, that was Palin stuff. That was like 8 years ago.
Right. But this has been Fox's line of rhetoric forever.
But my sense was like, you know, why was the Republican establishment, this came from like every sector, it seems to me, so determined to knock Rubio down? I mean, my sense is that there's other stuff that they're worried about with Rubio. And this was just an opportunity that they seized upon. Because, look, you know, like you say, every politician goes around and has their macros that they repeat. He may do it a little bit more than others. But there was a real sense that they wanted to knock him down. I mean, do you get the sense that there's still this idea that, like, Bush is going to come back or what? I mean, they really just...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, you know... You remember there were news stories about the last election cycle that Mitt Romney was considering choosing Rubio as his running mate, and then they dug up Oppo on him during the vetting process that convinced him that he was not a good choice.
Right.
And so my guess is that the Republican establishment wouldn't be thrilled if it was Rubio that they had to coalesce around, but what choices do they really have right now? Unless Kasich does really well tonight, in which case I would imagine that they would throw all their weight behind him. But they've already invested so heavily in Jeb, and Jeb doesn't need to go begging for money to stay in this thing until March. You know, he can stick around and keep picking off 5 to 7% each race. So I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking is. I have heard also that Rubio is a very off-putting personality in the Senate, and that people don't like dealing with him, and that's one of the reasons why he hasn't gotten a whole lot done there. And maybe he has internal bureaucratic issues with the party. They just don't like him. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say what's going on there.
And the interesting thing to me too about, you know, just watching that last debate is that guys like Kasich, who may be ascendant, they're and even with Rubio, like, you didn't hear the whole Republican election or primary seems to be on Trump's turf, which is totally personality driven, right? Like, you don't even hear people, you know, if Kasich does well and we see another debate, we may start hearing again about him expanding Medicaid and being attacked, you know, for, I mean, this is a party that has tried to vote to repeal Obamacare, I don't know, 55, 60 times, like literally. And the idea that this guy embraced it so strongly, I would imagine, is a huge weak spot for him. And we don't even hear about that anymore because they're just too busy saying this one flop sweats, this one raises, uses. I mean, literally, they have become sort of what we do to make fun of the debate on a rolling basis. Like, we just mock the way they look and some level, and that's basically what the Republicans have done now.
That's what it is, right? That we've turned it into American Idol or whatever it is, and you know, we're the peanut gallery, or the voters of the peanut gallery, right? Deciding who stays on stage longer, and I don't know, or the gong show, I guess, maybe is another metaphor, right, that would fit here. And it doesn't have anything to do. I mean, that's what's so interesting about this race. Is that policy has almost nothing to do with it. If you listen to Trump's stump speech, it's just chock full of stuff that could have come from Dick Gephardt. And you talk to his supporters afterwards, you know, and you ask them things like, hey, you know, are you aware that tariffs are not a particularly conservative position? Or, I mean, I don't know. I mean, some of the other things that he's saying are the opposite of what the party's been saying for a generation now. I mean, Trump is talking about how if he becomes president and Ford wants to move a factory to Mexico, that he's going to personally pick up the phone and intervene and order Ford to not move their factory. And this is after a generation of hearing that the one thing that's holding back American business is big government getting in the way of corporations, right? And now here's Trump saying that he's going to be personally involved in you know, in private business, and the crowd love it. They don't care. It's the opposite of what they've been, you know, arguing for ages. So I don't know.
I mean, what is it?
It has nothing to do with politics.
Is it? Well, I mean, it has nothing to do with policy, but it seems to me there's a huge authoritarian sort of impulse in the Republican Party, and he is just
gone
all in on quenching that desire.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, what it is to me is a total lack of confidence in the traditional method of delivering change or any kind of benefit to voters. And they want a stronger hand who's just going to reach out into the ether and bring manufacturing jobs back to places like New Hampshire by force. And Trump's message is basically that the way we do things with, you know, representative democracy and regulations and laws and you know, waiting for the market to sort itself out and having to compete with China and you know, countries that are devaluing their currencies to make their import, their exports, you know, cheaper. You know, he's not going to put up with that anymore. He, Donald Trump, is going to fix all of that unilaterally by using the power of the presidency. And people are cool with that. That's what they want. They don't want to have to, you know, tiptoe around the subject anymore. They just want somebody to deliver jobs to them, however it works out.
How much is the anti-PC message resonating, and what's your sense of what's behind that?
I think that's a big thing, and look, a lot of this is internet driven. I mean, Trump is a prolific and I would say pretty good tweeter. Actually,
right.
he has a really good instinct for it. Even though he's insane, he does connect.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive things. Actually, to be honest with you,
right? Yeah, exactly. But a huge part of his audience, they're people who are on the web constantly, and I think the, you know, the social justice warrior types, the people who go out of their way to pick fights with the Stormfront, you know, community out there, who are language policing, and you know, the stories like Ithaca and Yale and Missouri and all those things. All that stuff terrifies a certain segment of society, and Donald Trump, you know, is the antidote to all that for those people. He's somebody who's going to say what he wants, and he's immune to the one weapon that PC, if you want to call it that. I mean, there are some people who don't really think that it exists, but you know, how does it work? You know, if somebody says something that's out of bounds, usually what happens is the media piles on that person until they're like a stain in the ground and they don't ever reappear in public again. And Trump has broken the mold. He's over time and time again broken the rules, and not only is he not disappearing from the stage, he's gaining strength, and people love that. They love that about him. They're inspired by that story, and you know, people should think about the meaning of that, I think.
And this is a function, we got to say, and I want to turn just briefly to the Democratic side, but this is a function of, I mean, I don't think, I'm sure there's some type of crossover, but I just don't think, I mean, I think he's in the right party at the right time, right? I mean, this isn't a sort of a universal feature. I mean, this seems to be, he's still, I don't know, around 75% disapproval from normal human beings outside of the Republican Party.
Right. But how many of those people are likely voters?
I don't know.
So if you figure only half or 48% of people vote, I am increasingly coming around to the idea that he could actually win. So, you know, even though most normal people don't approve of him, he's got a way to win, I think. I really do. And we should start getting a little concerned about that.
Do you get the sense that he has like an operation there? Like the big supposed knock on him in Iowa was that he didn't have a ground game, but it seems to me he still managed to get the highest vote tally of anybody in the history of the Iowa Republican caucus, short of Ted Cruz, and I'm talking historically.
Right. I haven't seen a lot of Trump people out there, but you know, as some of his supporters point out, the means by which he gets his votes, other candidates have to pay for right. Those results, and he doesn't. You know, he's on TV 200 times more than any other candidate.
Right.
When he gets that much more attention everywhere he goes. There are 500 or 600 accredited journalists following him around. So, you know, it's not like he's having the trouble reaching people. His message is in everybody's living rooms, you know, 3 hours a day.
Somebody has to break out, like, what his earned media, what that dollar value would be. I mean, because I think if you actually, like, broke that out, he's spent probably more than anybody else on the campaign. except for it's just been
in the,
all...
Well, it's probably in the history of politics. I think right. It would be, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just Definitely. Talk briefly about what's going on the Democratic side. I don't know how much you're paying attention to that. I mean, people can go back and read your big piece on Bernie Sanders. But the... And I don't know if you caught the news about Timothy Geithner getting that big loan to help build.
I did, yeah.
Well, I mean, to me, there's a, you know, sort of that story about Tim Geithner is really what the issue is with Hillary Clinton in her speeches. It doesn't matter to me what she said there. And I don't think that she's like, I'm going to now be very pro-Wall Street now that I've gotten this speaking engagement. It just seems to me that in the same way that Tim Geithner gets that loan when you and I obviously never could, she gets those speaking fees because she's part of that tribe in some way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, these people aren't stupid. They know that's what they're buying. They, you know, they, that's why they spend tons and tons of money on politicians. I also think that there's also an element of the more time you spend with people of that ilk, you come around to their point of view about things. And you have to remember that Hillary and her husband, you know, they were the first people to bring Bob Rubin into the White House. And so they have this long history with Goldman Sachs and that crew that goes back to the early 90s. And they're inclined to see things from their point of view and you know, from what I hear about what the speeches that she gave to Goldman Sachs, she was essentially addressing their number one concern, which is that they didn't feel that it was appropriate that they should be solely blamed for what happened. And she was apparently saying something along the lines of, you know, it takes a village to create a financial crisis and we're all going to pull through this together. And, you know, I'm not going to point the finger at you. And she hasn't. If you listen to her speeches, she's gone out of her way to talk about things like shadow banking and you know, non-bank institutions like AIG. She's pointed the finger away from the big commercial and investment banks. And that's exactly what they want. So they're already getting the performance that they want from somebody like Hillary. So, yeah, and I think you're... That's the issue with the speaking fees is it's not so much that they're going to directly buy influence. It's more that you get a kind of simpatico over time just by the closeness and the intimacy of spending time with those people.
It seems to me it's indicative of just who she is that they would just have her in there to give them. I mean, why not? Right? I mean. Throw some friends some money.
Can you imagine Bernie Sanders getting paid $675,000 to speak to Goldman Sachs?
I can't even imagine. Honestly, I can't even imagine them inviting him to speak for $5,000. Like, I just don't think that they are interested in hearing what he has to say. So it's not even like the dollar thing. It's like they don't. They're inviting people who are in some way, like you say, simpatico. Like we're not, you know, maybe we'll go out of our element and we'll invite, who's that guy, that motivational speaker? The guy, Timothy Robbins or whatever his name is. Or,
Tom Robbins.
Tony Roberts. Yeah, yeah, whatever. I mean, we'll have him in there. But outside of that, it's like if we're going to have a political figure, we're going to have somebody in that we like. And that is going to have some heft, but is not going to come in and basically say, like, you guys are bad people. Your business is sucking like a parasite off of. I have a feeling Bernie would go in there and just, you know, they crap on them a little bit.
Right, and yeah, they're not even interested in hearing what the other side of the argument is. So, that's significant. And Hillary, that answer she gave—that's what they were offering. That's a bad answer. You know, that's gonna stick with her, and you know, frankly, this is part of my concern with the Trump phenomenon. It's all tied in with this. Is that you know, if you listen even to the other Republican candidates now, they're already starting to pivot and you know, use rhetoric that's targeting big business and the corporations. You know, where they used to talk about big government all the time. and, you know, redistributing wealth to people who are on welfare. Now, you know, I heard Ted Cruz yesterday talking about, you know, we're redistributing wealth to the corporations, and he got this big applause line at a rally. Well, if you have Donald Trump in the race against Hillary Clinton, you know, he's going to be able to stand up there and tell people that Hillary Clinton is the creature of, you know, big corporations now, and that she's part of this other kind of establishment. I mean, the whole theme of this race is being anti-establishment, anti-media, anti-beltway, anti-everything. And she's not an outsider. She's an insider. That's why she's going to be vulnerable. I worry about that, you know?
I mean, do you think this? I mean, put this campaign in the trajectory of like literally of like the past like three or four that we've had. I mean, the one thing that struck me today, because I remember back in 2012 and 2008, you know, bumping into you at like at MSNBC, or you know, maybe in 2012 it was Current, and maybe it was 2012 when we were thinking like, it's possible nobody wins this Republican primary. Like, and this is when Mitt Romney had already shown a lot more dominance, right? I mean, you know, he won New Hampshire, and then he got sort of tripped up, I think, in a large part because of birth control, and then by Newt Gingrich with Bain Capital. But there was never this level of sort of lack of clarity in 2012. But just, you know, in one of the things that I think gives me some solace, I share the same fears about Trump versus Clinton. But in the event that Bernie Sanders does not, you know, become the nominee, that there just seems to be a trajectory that is bigger than these campaigns, that the American public very slowly is moving in a certain direction. And you start to see it play out on the right with some measure of insanity, but on the, you know, nominal left, you know, you're seeing Bernie Sanders legitimately at this point be a threat to Clinton. And, you know, I think there's some, I mean, Clinton has some campaign just problems, like just, you know, sort of nuts and bolts stuff. But, I mean, I think this is sort of a bigger trend than just an anomalous election season.
No, you're absolutely right. But I think that's the problem, is that the problem on both sides, and I think what voters on both sides are feeling, is that the process that we've gone through for the past, you know, I don't know, 10 election cycles, that it doesn't work for people anymore. And they're mad at every single element of the process. They're mad at the campaign press. They're mad at the donors. They're mad at the party leaders. And so that triumvirate, which in the past pretty much solely determined who was going to be the nominees of both parties, they're toxic. To mention any of those elements in public elicits boos on both sides of the aisle. So what happens when you have a candidate like Hillary, who, you know, is going to represent all of those elements if she gets the nomination? What worries me is that there's going to be this enthusiasm gap there, right? And I know that Bernie followers will probably fall in line with Hillary if she ends up being the nominee. But will they come out? Will they work as hard? Whereas Trump's people are fired up. I mean, I think that's what people are underestimating. They just don't think it's ever going to be possible, but I think it is possible. That's what worries me.
Yeah. I share that same fear.
Just to piggyback on that just for a second, just to compare this to previous campaigns, it's such a, This is different from previous campaigns significantly, because in previous campaigns, every time the voters have tried to say, you know, we're not going to go along with what the party wants us to do, with what the media wants us to do, with what the donors want us to do, like with Howard Dean or whatever. Eventually those other candidates got ground down, and they got kicked to the side, and we got the establishment candidate in the end. That's just not going to happen this time. It's just every attempt to do that has failed miserably, especially on the Republican side.
Well, part of it
it's a real revolt, you know.
Part of it on the Republican side is, you know, there was this whole buildup, and we heard the same thing in 2012 that this is a really deep bench. They have some really, honestly, we heard this more this time than we did even in 2012. And this bench is not deep. It is not deep.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, Kasich, I think, would have been a very tough, and even if he wins, he comes in second in New Hampshire. I just think that he has the embrace of Obamacare is, you know, it doesn't, nobody sort of understands. I don't think any of the people who would be mad about it would understand it because they've already sort of embraced Trump's universal health care. They don't mind about that. But the fact that Kasich just expanded Medicaid, I just think that's an apostasy. And there's just no way that just like it's just a whistle. It's, you know, it's like, you know, hitting a hammer on somebody's knee. They're just going to kick him out of there. And then aside from that, you have some really, really bad candidates. I mean, the guy who just took down Marco Rubio for repeating himself, or may have, is very likely, I think, to be indicted. You know, it's like,
right.
That's the straight, you know, they're all toxic in their own way to voters, it seems to me, and to, you know, the big supporters. And that's why I guess that's the point with Trump, right? Like he's not just, he's got something and he's also none of the above.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. And that's what's so attractive about him. And that's what's going to make it so hard to get rid of him. I mean, the frenetic efforts by Washington, but you know, the National Review pundits ganging up on him, all that stuff helps him. I think people don't understand the negative attention that he's getting from people in the media, from lefty malcontents like us, from, you know, the money people, from George Will, from all that crowd. All that does is just impress people who want to vote for him. So, yeah, I don't know. I just don't. In the past, they got rid of people who didn't fit, and now the establishment, the machinery has lost the ability to do that. So.
And that's just another way of saying that Donald Trump has balls the size of watermelons.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Well, Matt, always a pleasure. Good luck up there, buddy. Enjoy yourself.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sam. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
We'll be in touch.
Bye. All right, great. All right, folks. Matt Taibbi stuck in the hinterlands. Man, had to break the... I mean, just like think of like how difficult it must be to be someone who is a reporter and be like, oh, that's the story I... That's the story, like, that he said, you know, lady part on stage. Like, that's, you got to be careful, you know, up there. He's in a depressing hotel, probably, in New Hampshire. It's snowing outside. It's gray. And he's like, ugh, I got to go see another Donald Trump. I mean, I went up there in 2008. With 236, which was a comedy site that was ultimately bought by Huffington Post and then ultimately shut down, like every endeavor I ever participated in. And I think Eugene Merman was up there. We were all up there together. He shot some videos. I shot some videos. I can't remember who else it was. And we had cameramen. And I remember I went to a Mitt Romney rally. I went to a John McCain rally. I went to a Mike Huckabee rally. I went to, was there one other? I can't recall at the time. But I remember them all very, very vividly and just being around. And there's, you know, and I remember, I think maybe being at that Radisson Hotel. I'm not sure that's where it was. But, I remember distinctly that the people you would see with the most presence on the streets, signs and enthusiasm were Ron Paul fanatics. And if I think every single person who voted for Ron Paul in New Hampshire in 2008 was on the street holding a sign. You know, so you put whatever, 4,000 people, 5,000 people, I don't even remember what his vote tally was. You put them all on the street, it's going to look pretty massive. And I do remember going around and asking people, if you could have anybody run for the Republican nomination, who would it be? And almost every single person, except for one Ron Paul, and I probably interviewed, I don't know, 40 people. Not that many, but who they would want. And to a person, each one, except for one Ron Paul fan, said Ronald Reagan. And I don't hear that as much this time around.
Well, I mean, look, frankly, Ronald Reagan's dead. And I prefer candidates.
They knew
that are alive.
He was dead. He was dead at that time.
Look, to be honest with you, I think I'm going to do a much better job than Ronald Reagan. He was a nice old man. Alzheimer's for losers. I don't do that.
Right.
All right.
I like I've my presidents to be conscious.
I like my presidents to not be jamming jelly beans down their face while they forget what time of day it is. But, you know, that's just me.
All right. I know you guys did your predictions yesterday when I was not here.
It's
which
true.
Was not appropriate.
It's true.
We
did a great
because,
job. It was fantastic.
Because of your raisin testicles. Too afraid to do it in front of me. I love that lady. I do love that lady. She is fantastic.
She did a great job.
She did a great job. I'm going to... Now, wait a second. Now, you and Kelly said Trump... What was it? Kasich...
Trump, Kasich, Bush.
Uh huh.
And I had Rubio three. I had Rubio at third.
Okay.
We can go to fourth. I guess we can go to fourth. And then everybody picked
Bernie.
Should
go to fourth.
Everybody picked Bernie.
Well, I think Bernie's going to win, but the really it's the margin.
Okay, we'll do margins. So just reset it.
All right. Well, here are the predictions so that we can get a sense. This is where I'm going to say. And I'm being a little bit contrary just to create some excitement. But I'm going to say Trump, then Bush. But I think like Bush, Kasich, Cruz, and Rubio are going to be within 4 points of each other, maybe 5 points, somewhere between 9 points and 14 points. But I'll just say... maybe 15 points. I'll say Bush. So I would go Trump, Bush, Kasich, Rubio, and Cruz. But they're going to be so close that it's almost going to be inconsequential. And it's going to be the worst case scenario for the Republican establishment. And then Christie, and then I don't know. Who else? Triumph, the insult comic doc, will come in. We'll beat Carly Fiorina.
So what was it again? It's Trump.
Trump, Bush, Kasich, Rubio, Cruz. Okay. And then Bernie on the Democratic side. And
by
Bernie,
what margin?
Bernie by 11 points. Just enough. For them to say double digits. I mean, if Bernie does not win in New Hampshire, it is a real problem. It is a real problem.
Oh, that would
if
be,
it's in
that
single
would be a disaster.
Digits, it's basically the same situation that we have now. In double digits, it really fundamentally, it's in the same decision that we have now. I mean, it's already an expectation. I mean, the key is going to be Nevada for Bernie, and then. And obviously going forward. But all right. So what do you have for your lower down picks, Michael?
My lower down picks, Cruz fifth, Rubio fourth. So I agree with you, but I'm switching. I think Kasich gets two. So Bush in third and Trump cleans up. I think Trump will win by a significant margin. And I think I take, you know, if the polls are in any way right, and maybe this is also just what I want to see happen to some degree, but I'll take Bernie at 15 points.
All right, there we go. Do you want to add any, Kelly? No?
This is getting pretty specific.
All right, we don't have to get specific.
I just...
Let's slow the show down just a little bit.
Sorry. No, so... what Michael said, essentially, except I think 15 is maybe too high. Cruz and Rubio for 4 and 5. I don't know which one.
All right. Crubio.
Right. Yeah. They're just the
Crubio.
The two
child Republican prodigies.
Okay. There you go. I'll go. I'm going Trump, Kasich, Rubio, Bush, and Cruz, and Bernie by 18.
By 18. Wow. Coming out strong. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half. Remember, it is your membership that makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to mix things up a little bit. You know, since we're going to be just talking about results from New Hampshire, we may, we may go with our sister station in Stoughton, Massachusetts.
Let me just say, dude, foreshadowing.
That's right. There you go. There's a foreshadow. We may do it to have fun. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at MajorityReportKickback.com. Or if you buy stuff from jet.com. If you're one of those people who have decided to go jet.com, folks, majorityreportkickback.com, we get a kickback. You'll notice no difference. All right. Back in a second.
An apple pie.